Section 3. Life on the Home Front. An American Story. Laura Briggs was a young woman living on a farm in Idaho when World War II began. As with many other Americans, the war completely changed her outlook on life. When I was growing up, it was very much Depression times. As farm prices during the war began to get better and better, farm times became good times. We and most other farmers went from a tar paper shack to a new frame house with indoor plumbing. Now we had an electric stove instead of a wood-burning one and running water at the sink. The war made many changes in our town. I think the most important is that aspirations changed. People suddenly had the idea, hey, I can reach that. I can have that. I can do that. I could even send my kid to college if I wanted to. Quoted in Wartime America, the World War II home front. Women and minorities gain ground. As American troops fought their first battles against the Germans and Japanese, the war began to dramatically change American society at home. In contrast to the devastation the war brought to large parts of Europe and Asia, World War II had a positive effect on American society. The war finally put an end to the Great Depression. Mobilizing the economy created almost 19 million new jobs and nearly doubled the average family's income. When the war began, American defense factories wanted to hire white men. With so many men in the military, there simply were not enough white men to fill all of the jobs. Under pressure to produce, employers began to recruit women and minorities. Women in the defense plants. During the Depression, many people believed married women should not work outside the home, especially if it meant taking jobs away from men trying to support their families. Most women who did work were young, single, and employed in traditional female jobs. The wartime labor shortage, however, forced factories to recruit married women to do industrial jobs that traditionally had been reserved for men. Although the government hired nearly 4 million women for mostly clerical jobs, it was the women in the factories who captured the public's imagination. The great symbol of the campaign to hire women was Rosie the Riveter, a character from a popular song by the Four Vagabonds. The lyrics told of Rosie, who worked in a factory while her boyfriend served in the Marines. Images of Rosie appeared on posters, in newspapers, and in magazines. Eventually, 2.5 million women went to work in shipyards, aircraft factories, and other manufacturing plants. For many older, middle-class women like Inez Sauer, working in a factory changed their perspective. I learned that just because you're a woman and have never worked is no reason you can't learn. The job really broadened me. I'd always been in a shell. I'd always been protected. But at Boeing, I found a freedom and an independence I had never known. After the war, I could never go back to playing bridge again, being a club woman, when I knew there were things you could use your mind for. The war changed my life completely. Quoted in Eyewitness to World War II. Although most women left the factories after the war, their success permanently changed American attitudes about women in the workplace. African Americans demand war work. Although factories were hiring women, they resisted hiring African Americans. Frustrated by the situation, A. Philip Randolph, the head of the Brotherhood of Sleeping Car Porters, a major union for African American railroad workers, decided to take action. He informed President Roosevelt that he was organizing from 10 to 50,000 African Americans to march on Washington in the interest of securing jobs in national defense and integration into the military and naval forces. In response, Roosevelt issued Executive Order 8802 on June 25, 1941. The order declared, "There shall be no discrimination in the employment of workers in defense industries or government because of race, creed, color, or national origin." To enforce the order, the president created the Fair Employment Practices Commission, the first civil rights agency established by the federal government since the Reconstruction era. Mexicans become farm workers. The wartime economy needed workers in many different areas. To help farmers in the Southwest overcome the labor shortage, the government introduced the Braquero program in 1942. Braquero is Spanish for worker. The federal government arranged for Mexican farm workers to help in the harvest. Over 200,000 Mexicans came to the United States to help harvest fruit and vegetables in the Southwest. Many also helped to build and maintain railroads. The Braquero program continued until 1964. Migrant farm workers became an important part of the Southwest agricultural system. Reading check. Describing. How did mobilizing the economy help end the Depression? A nation on the move. The wartime economy created millions of new jobs, but the Americans who wanted these jobs did not always live nearby. To get to the jobs, 15 million Americans moved during the war. Although the assembly plants of the Midwest and the shipyards of the Northeast attracted many workers, most Americans headed west and south in search of jobs. Taken together, the growth of Southern California and the expansion of cities in the Deep South created a new industrial region, the Sun Belt. For the first time since the Industrial Revolution began in the United States, the South and West led the way in manufacturing and urbanization. The housing crisis. Perhaps the most difficult task facing cities with war industries was deciding where to put the thousands of new workers. Many people had to live in tents and tiny trailers. To help solve the housing crisis, the federal government allocated over $1.2 billion to build public housing, schools, and community centers during the war. Although prefabricated government housing had tiny rooms, thin walls, poor heating, and almost no privacy, it was better than no housing at all. Nearly 2 million people lived in government-built housing during the war. Racism explodes into violence. African Americans began to leave the South in great numbers during World War I, but this great migration, as historians refer to it, slowed during the Depression. When jobs and war factories opened up for African Americans during World War II, the Great Migration resumed. When African Americans arrived in the crowded cities of the North and West, however, they were often met with suspicion and intolerance. Sometimes these attitudes led to violence. The worst racial violence of the war erupted in Detroit on Sunday, June 20, 1943. The weather that day was sweltering. To cool off, nearly 100,000 people crowded into Belle Isle, a park on the Detroit River. Fights erupted between gangs of white and African-American teenage girls. These fights triggered others, and a full-scale riot erupted across the city. By the time the violence ended, 25 African-Americans and 9 whites had been killed. Despite the appalling violence in Detroit, African-American leaders remain committed to their Double V campaign. The Zoot Suit Riots. Wartime prejudice erupted elsewhere as well. In Southern California, racial tensions became entangled with juvenile delinquency. Across the nation, crimes committed by young people rose dramatically. In Los Angeles, racism against Mexican Americans and the fear of juvenile crime became linked because of the Zoot Suit. A Zoot Suit had very baggy pleated pants and an overstuffed knee-length jacket with wide lapels. Accessories included a wide-brimmed hat and a long keychain. Zoot Suit wearers usually wore their hair long, gathered into a ducktail. The Zoot Suit angered many Americans. In order to save fabric for the war, most men wore a victory suit, a suit with no vest, no cuffs, a short jacket, and narrow lapels. By comparison, the Zoot Suit seemed unpatriotic. In California, Mexican-American teenagers adopted the Zoot Suit. In June 1943, after hearing rumors that Zoot Suiters had attacked several sailors, 2,500 soldiers and sailors stormed into Mexican-American neighborhoods in Los Angeles. They attacked Mexican-American teenagers, cut their hair, and tore off their Zoot Suits. The police did not intervene, and the violence continued for several days. The city of Los Angeles responded by banning the Zoot Suit. racial hostility against Mexican Americans did not deter them from joining the war effort. Approximately 500,000 Hispanic Americans served in the armed forces during the war. Most, about 400,000, were Mexican American. Another 65,000 were from Puerto Rico. They fought in Europe, North Africa, and the Pacific, and by the end of the war, 17 Mexican Americans had received the Medal of Honor. Japanese American relocation. When Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, many West Coast Americans turned their anger against Japanese Americans. Mobs attacked Japanese American businesses and homes. Banks would not cash their checks, and grocers refused to sell them food. Newspapers printed rumors about Japanese spies in the Japanese American community. Members of Congress, mayors, and many business and labor leaders demanded that all people of Japanese ancestry be removed from the West Coast. They did not believe that Japanese Americans would remain loyal to the United States in the face of war with Japan. On February 19, 1942, President Roosevelt gave in to pressure and signed an order allowing the War Department to declare any part of the United States to be a military zone and to remove anybody they wanted from that zone. Secretary of War Henry Stimson declared most of the West Coast a military zone and ordered all people of Japanese ancestry to evacuate to 10 internment camps. Not all Japanese Americans accepted the relocation without protest. Fred Korematsu argued that his rights had been violated and took his case to the Supreme Court. In December 1944, in Korematsu versus the United States, the Supreme Court ruled that the relocation was constitutional because it was based not on race but on military urgency. Shortly afterward, the court did rule in ex parte endo that loyal American citizens could not be held against their will. In early 1945, therefore, the government began to release the Japanese Americans from the camps. Despite the fears and rumors, no Japanese American was ever tried for espionage or sabotage. Japanese Americans served as translators for the Army during the war in the Pacific. The All-Japanese 100th Battalion, later integrated into the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, was the most highly decorated unit in World War II. After the war, the Japanese American Citizens League, or JACL, tried to help Japanese Americans who had lost property during the relocation. In 1988, President Reagan apologized to Japanese Americans on behalf of the U.S. government and signed legislation granting $20,000 to each surviving Japanese American who had been interned. Reading check. Comparing. Why did racism lead to violence in Detroit and Los Angeles in 1943? Daily life in wartime America. Housing problems and racial tensions were serious difficulties during the war, but mobilization strained society in many other ways as well. Prices rose, materials were in short supply, and the question of how to pay for it all loomed ominously over the entire war effort. Economics. Wage and price controls. As the economy mobilized, the president worried about inflation. Both wages and prices began to rise quickly during the war because of the high demand for workers and raw materials. To stabilize both wages and prices, Roosevelt created the Office of Price Administration, or OPA, and the Office of Economic Stabilization, or OES. The OES regulated wages and the price of farm products. The OPA regulated all other prices. Despite some problems with labor unions, the OPA and OES were able to keep inflation under control. While the OPA and OES worked to control inflation, the War Labor Board, or WLB, tried to prevent strikes that might endanger the war effort. In support, most American unions issued a no-strike pledge, and instead of striking, asked the WLB to serve as a mediator in wage disputes. By the end of the war, the WLB had helped to settle 20,000 disputes involving 20 million workers. Blue points, red points. the demand for raw materials and supplies created shortages. The OPA began rationing or limiting the availability of many products to make sure enough were available for military use. Meat and sugar were rationed to provide enough for the Army. To save gasoline and rubber, gasoline was rationed, driving was restricted, and the speed limit was set at 35 miles per hour. Every month, each household would pick up a book of ration coupons. Blue coupons, called blue points, controlled processed foods. Red coupons, or red points, controlled meats, fats, and oils. Other coupons controlled items such as coffee and sugar. When people bought food, they also had to give enough coupon points to cover their purchases. Victory gardens and scrap drives. Americans also planted gardens to produce more food for the war effort. Any area of land might become a garden, backyards, schoolyards, city parks, and empty lots. The government encouraged victory gardens by praising them in film reels, pamphlets, and official statements. Certain raw materials were so vital to the war effort that the government organized scrap drives. Americans collected spare rubber, tin, aluminum, and steel. They donated pots, tires, tin cans, car bumpers, broken radiators, and rusting bicycles. Oils and fats were so important to the production of explosives that the WPB set up fat collecting stations. Americans would exchange bacon grease and meat drippings for extra ration coupons. The scrap drives were very successful, and one more reason for the success of American industry during the war. Paying for the war. The United States had to pay for all of the equipment and supplies it needed. The federal government spent more than $300 billion during World War II, more money than it had spent from Washington's administration to the end of Franklin Roosevelt's second term. To raise money, the government raised taxes. Because most Americans opposed large tax increases, Congress refused to raise taxes as high as Roosevelt requested. As a result, the extra taxes collected covered only 45% of the cost of the war. To raise the rest of the money, the government issued war bonds. When Americans bought bonds, they were loaning money to the government. In exchange for the money, the government promised that the bonds could be cashed in at some future date for the purchase price plus interest. The most common bonds were E-bonds, which sold for $18.75 and could be redeemed for $25 after 10 years. Individual Americans bought nearly $50 billion worth of war bonds. Banks, insurance companies, and other financial institutions bought the rest, over $100 billion worth of bonds. V for victory. Despite the hardships, the overwhelming majority of Americans believed the war had to be fought. Although the war brought many changes to the United States, most Americans remained united behind one goal, winning the war. Reading check. Evaluating. How did rationing affect daily life in the United States? How did it affect the economy?